Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney. I'm thrilled to be able to present to you another of our explorations of the war for the free world, as I think of it. Starting off with an esteemed colleague and a man that I've watched in a number of incarnations over the years render real and considerable public service. He is Robert McFarlane, a former national security advisor to President Reagan, who has served in uniform as well as in civilian capacity, his country with considerable distinction. He is currently a driving force behind a program that I want to talk a little bit about with him again today, which is the U.S. Energy Security Council. He is also chairman of McFarlane Associates, a consulting firm here in the Washington area. Bud McFarlane, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us. Hope you had a good Easter.
Right. It's a pleasure always to join you.
Thank you. Let me start with a topic that I teased a moment ago, which is near and dear to your heart, I know, and to mine as well. You were presiding at a panel as part of a program last week in Washington that I thought was really quite extraordinary. You brought together, under the rubric of this U.S. Energy Security Council, a considerable array of eminences of various kinds from Capitol Hill and as yourself served both on the Hill and in the executive branch. For a sort of common denominator that had a lot to do with what practical steps we could take with respect to energy security. And Bud, just if you wouldn't mind recapping kind of what the thrust of that conversation was and why it's important that we act on it, not just talk about it.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, Frank. As most of your listeners are very well aware, price of gasoline is going up again, and we seem constantly to be befuddled by why this happens. It's been happening for the past 40 years, and as a practical matter, it's going to keep happening as long as the price of gasoline is set by a cartel overseas, the OPEC cartel, that owns about 80% of the world oil reserves and only produces about a third of daily supply, because that captive ownership and ability to control the supply of oil throughout the world enables them to set the price. Well, every time in the past we have gotten serious about trying to do something about this, under the leadership of your former boss, Senator Scoob Jackson, about 40 years ago, OPEC sees that we are getting serious and then drops the price and we all become complacent. Well, your question goes to last week's session, that the latest effort on American part to look hard at how do we get off this treadmill? And the answer is simply stated, introduce competition. It's the only way you ever beat a cartel. And the good news is there really is an alternative to having to use gasoline. Henry Ford 100 years ago said we really ought to be running these cars on alcohol. And then he had an unfortunate lunch with John Rockefeller, who ran an oil company, and the rest is unfortunately history. However, now we are beginning to see that, especially with the windfall discovery of a huge amount of natural gas in our country here, you can turn that into a fuel for your automobile, either as compressed natural gas or in liquid form, which is easier, that form being methanol. And so last week we were talking about, well, how much would that cost? How soon could you do it? And turns out that you could deliver the equivalent to a gallon of gasoline for about $3 in methanol. So we were trying to kind of educate, raise awareness, and get the Congress focused on helping do that, as soon as possible, because unless we do, Frank, we're going to face $8 or $9 a gallon gasoline here within 2 or 3 years, and it'll put our economy back into a recession.
Seriously. So, Bud McFarland, of course, you have, as I mentioned, a distinguished background in the United States military, as well as serving as President Reagan's national security advisor. You've spent a lot of time both thinking about and actually being involved in the security piece of all of this. Can you just give us, in a very quick sense, what the stakes are, not just for our economy, but for our security, if we persist in transferring national wealth to enemies of this country, as we currently are, under the present monopolistic condition of this cartel?
Well, every year we spend about $400 billion in buying overseas oil. Well, think of what we could do if we had that $400 billion right here in our country to create jobs and disposable income for you and me and every American. But in addition to the economic loss that the imported oil costs, part of that money, let's say it's only 1%, goes through Saudi Arabia and other OPEC countries to Al-Qaeda and their affiliates that are threatening us and allied countries throughout the world. And then, of course, we don't even count publicly the fact that about a third of our military budget of a $500 billion goes to supporting the sea lines that carry all that oil from us or from the Persian Gulf here, Japan, friends in Europe, and so forth. In short, this monopolistic fuel, oil, really does serve as the lifeblood of the entire global economy. And until we introduce alternatives, we really are allowing this stranglehold on our very existence to be held by this OPEC cartel. So economic security, our national security, our military strength, our environment, for that matter, oil is not very good for you. There are ways to get around it. We need to get started. We have the means to do it. We just have to focus.
Well, we're speaking with Robert McFarland. He is president of McFarland Associates. He is also, as I say, a driving force behind an estimable group of both civil and public servants who've come together under the rubric of the U.S. Energy Security Council to do just that, and I commend you for it. But very quickly, let me just turn to another topic, not unrelated to the other, Iran. You have had some experience negotiating with the Iranians in the past. President Obama is seemingly intent on doing it yet again, once more in the hopes that this time they'll give up this nuclear weapons quest they've been pursuing for some 20 years. What advice would you have for the president at this point, and for the country for that matter?
Well, Frank, it really has been a dispiriting experience, not only for the past 3+ years, but for the 40 years almost since the theocratic crusaders in Iran have come to power. And the practical matter is that engagement, which has been President Obama's belief that you could simply persuade Iranians to behave more like Americans, it simply doesn't work. This bait and switch performance in the dialogue over nuclear weapons has been just that. It's Lucy and the football. They promise that they're going to negotiate seriously, and then they either decide not to negotiate at all, or they come and take all of the meaningful changes that are needed right off the table. So it's time we awaken to this fraud, to this deception, and realize that things aren't going to change in Iran until there is regime change in Iran. And think seriously about how do you do that. I mean, the Iranian people are basically pro-American. We ought to be reaching out to them and broadcasting, fostering travel, trying to put people on the ground, for that matter, that can help the Iranians form a political opposition worthy of the name and change this government. But this illusion that we can somehow talk them into getting rid of nuclear weapons is just not going to work.
Just that, an illusion. Bud McFarlane, thank you for your insights as always and for your continuing service to our country. We'll look forward to visiting with you again very soon about this and much, much more. In the meantime, we'll be speaking with Dr. Barry Rubin about this and much, much more, the Iranian threat and what else is happening in the Middle East that ought to be on our minds big time. Straight ahead.
Want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at securefreedomradio.org. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY. 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer. The powerful, all-natural way to lose weight. 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. As promised, we are joined by Dr. Barry Rubin. He is the director of the GLORIA Center, which stands for Global Research in International Affairs at the highly esteemed Herzliya Center in Israel. He is the author most recently of Israel, an introduction from Yale University Press, just out in the past month or so, and numerous other books, including an important one about the Muslim Brotherhood, the organization and policies of a global Islamist movement. We'll come to the Brotherhood in a moment. Barry Rubin, we're obviously in the midst of a presidential campaign here in the United States, as you know. President Obama is running in part on the strength of his acumen as a commander-in-chief, as a manager of the nation's interests in international affairs. How does the presidency of Barack Obama, now some nearly 4 years on, look from your vantage point in the heart of the Middle East, in Israel?
Let's just take events of the last few days and show how bizarre and failed Obama's policy is. Number one, Iran. Obama says, this is your last chance. We are offering you to have nuclear power if you give up nuclear weapons. The Iranians, and this is the same proposal he offered 3 years ago, the Iranians reject his proposal before the negotiations begin. So you've given them a last chance. They reject it. So what do you do then? Failure. Number two, Syria. The administration has been very slow to respond to the Syrian civil war, and when it's responded, it's generally supported Muslim Brotherhood factors in the opposition. It puts together a ceasefire, which anyone should have known would fail, because these two sides are going to fight to the death. One's going to win or the other. The ceasefire fails. So then what are you going to do? Go back to more diplomacy? Three, Egypt. The administration has favored the Muslim Brotherhood. It's true that they won the election, but since literally January or February of last year, the administration has favored them. It condemns the military. It then turns over a huge amount of money to a regime which just held Americans hostage until $4 million in ransom was paid, to a regime that the Obama administration doesn't even support. And again, cozies up to the Muslim Brotherhood, inviting them to Washington at a moment when the Brotherhood has become more radical, more demanding, and by the way, Egypt is dissolving into chaos over this presidential election. That's a third failure. Now, all of these should be highly visible, but they're not, because the mass media doesn't play them that way.
Barry Rubin, let me just drill down on that last point a bit with you. We're actually told here by the mass media and by the Obama administration that the Muslim Brotherhood is actually quite moderate, that there are these Salafists you have to worry about. They're off on the fringes, but the moderates are sort of congealing around the Muslim Brotherhood. And notwithstanding the statement made by the party's presidential candidate about Sharia, that it's really basically going to be a secular deal. And that was certainly the message conveyed during their charm offensive, as the Washington Post called it, here in Washington. What's the truth?
The problem is that if you read a single article in the Muslim Brotherhood press, a single speech made by leaders for domestic consumption, they are always extremely extremist. Number two, it is true that there are these Salafists who are even more radical. But the spin being put on it by the administration and the mass media is that the Muslim Brotherhood is going to protect people from the Salafists. But the problem is that the Salafists are pushing the Muslim Brotherhood itself to become more radical and to speed up the process because they're competing. So if the Muslim Brotherhood is the protector against the Salafists, then Iran is the protector against Al-Qaeda, Hamas is the protector against Salafist forces in the Gaza Strip, and so on. And you therefore are empowering your number one enemy in the fantasy that it's going to protect you from a smaller force that has no chance of taking power. This is functionally insane, but it is very much, very consciously, the ideology, the position that the administration has. And, of course, it also relates to Obama's proximity to the Turkish regime.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
So here's the central problem in one sentence. The U.S., the West, has to recognize the threat posed by revolutionary Islamist groups that want to impose Sharia dictatorships, not to view those as protectors against even more, quote, extremist groups that simply want to do the same thing a bit faster.
Yes. I'm glad you brought up Turkey, Dr. Barry Rubin. And again, he is the director of the Gloria Center at Herzliya in Israel. He's also a columnist for Pajamas Media, a very important outlet here in the United States. And again, author of most recently Israel, An Introduction. Turkey is, it would seem, the fulcrum on which the Obama foreign policy, such as it is, is pivoting. Most recently, I believe the president has entrusted to Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the prime minister, the Islamist, the Muslim Brotherhood president, prime minister rather, of Turkey, the responsibility for sort of serving as an interlocutor with, or at least intermediary with the Iranians on this nuclear business. What's going on here, and how misplaced is that confidence?
Well, I first have to say that it's very much on the public record that Erdogan, the prime minister of Turkey, has consistently defended Iran, said it isn't seeking nuclear weapons. Iran-Turkey trade has greatly increased. Iran has referred to Turkey in the media, in the pro-regime media in Tehran, as an ally. But as amazing as this is, consider, again, all this stuff's on the public record. Consider this fact. In, I think, late 2010, the Erdogan and the Turkish government, at the moment when the U.S. was trying to intensify sanctions against Iran at the U.N., went to Tehran and cut a separate deal which undermined the U.S. drive to toughen sanctions. In other words, the Turkish regime betrayed the U.S. as an interlocutor with Iran. So then, do you ask them to be an interlocutor with Iran again? I mean, this is, I'm very careful that I do not want to exaggerate how bad this administration's policy is, but they keep pushing the envelope further. I mean, just stop and think about that. You entrusted someone to be your mediator with Iran. They failed. They cut a deal that you publicly denounced, and then you ask them to do it again?
It speaks to Einstein's definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Very quickly, Barry Rubin, Israel has suffered, I think, a really very serious blow at the hands of the Obama administration, yet another failure, if you will, in the compromise, reportedly, of negotiations between Israel and Azerbaijan over staging facilities that might be used in an attack. What can you tell us about that?
I have a problem with this, and I'm a person who is basically the closest thing to an agent of Hamas and Hezbollah, and that includes, therefore, Iran, who has previously lied, writes an article making a claim. That does not make that claim credible to me. I know Azerbaijan. I think that basically this was a made-up story, and that the critics of the Obama administration have mishandled it, blaming it on the Obama administration. There are other issues which, you know, are reasonable. But people keep insisting that Israel is about to attack Iran, is going to attack Iran in 2012. I mean, standing in Israel, that just seems absolutely and totally ludicrous for reasons that probably go beyond our time span.
But well, in fact, we're at the end of our time span.
Azerbaijan is scared to death of Iran. They're isolated. The idea that they would allow an Israeli strike to me is totally absurd on the face of it.
We will take this up with you again in the near future, I hope. Barry Rubin, thank you very much for joining us today and for the work you do at the Gloria Center. We look forward to visiting with you again soon and collaborating with you in that work. Next up, Faith McDonald talks to us about what is going on at the hands of the Islamists in Sudan. Coming right up.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 20222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by a remarkable woman. Her name is Faith McDonald. She is the Director of Religious Liberty Programs at the Institute on Religion and Democracy. And she has been just a voice of conscience and courage about what's been happening for many years now at the hands of Islamists based in Khartoum in Sudan against people of other faiths, of other races in other parts of what was once that country now involves a new nation, South Sudan. And Faith, we spoke with Congressman Frank Wolf about this apparent resurgence of genocidal behavior on the part of these folks in Khartoum, the Islamists. Tell us how this is manifesting itself as you see it on the ground now, and specifically some of the ways in which the North is trying to subvert the possible success of this newborn Southern Sudan nation.
Thank you, Frank. Yes, it's
really just a mess in Sudan, and it is exactly as you say. The North is trying to subvert the South as a new, free, democratic country. It's also trying to prevent any of the marginalized people in its own country from receiving human rights and freedom that they deserve. So we've got these two situations, and right now, one of the most outrageous things that's happened is that the governor of South Kordofan, which is where the Nuba Mountains are, where people are in crisis, has told the soldiers of the Sudan Armed Forces to fight after the people of the Nuba Mountains who are trying to defend their people, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North, and told his soldiers, don't bring them back alive, eat them alive. So that's the kind of attitude that the North has. Contrasting that, our friend Amin, who just got back from Sudan, has pictures of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North with the Chinese workers that they had captured in the Nuba Mountains, and how well they treated them and brought them back to the Chinese ambassador, and they were off on their way and seemed to be great friends. So this is the difference. We've got people who have no respect for human life, who want to bring a totalitarian Sharia state to the whole country and then move it throughout Africa, versus people who should be our natural allies, who want freedom and democracy, the kind that we have in the United States.
Let's come back to that in a moment, Faith McDonald, because I think that's really an important policy issue that we ought to be having a debate about here in this country as it relates to what the Obama administration is doing. But just to develop just a little bit more what's going on in the Nuba Mountains and in southern Sudan at the hands of these Islamists, tell us a little bit about, a lot of this obviously has to do with oil. We started the program with a conversation with Bud McFarland, former, as you know, National Security Advisor to President Reagan, and who's been really trying to make the case that no good comes of our dependency on oil. This seems to be another example of it. A lot of the oil that the country of Sudan has wound up being on the southern side of the border, that is to say in the new Republic of South Sudan. What is the North doing to try to get its hands on that oil, or at least, as you said, keep the South from benefiting from its sale?
Well, last week, the South Sudan's oil minister accused Khartoum of constructing an illegal pipeline to steal South Sudan's oil from Unity State.
Unity State being one of the states that's
in
play.
South Sudan, yeah. But yes, one of the areas where there's a lot of oil. Back in January, South Sudan had cut off the oil because of the controversy.
Cut off the shipment of oil through pipelines that run through its territory to the sea?
That's right, because they weren't getting fair recompense from Khartoum for this. And South Sudan has been exploring alternatives to cut Khartoum out completely and just have pipelines that go to Kenya or Djibouti. But at present, there's still this fight going on. And Sudan really does rely on the oil from South Sudan and relies on the funds that it gets. But, you know, it's interesting. At the same time that Khartoum is pleading poverty and is asking to have its debt relieved and all of these things, they're paying Iranian engineers who work in Khartoum in weapons factories $20,000 a month to build weapons for Khartoum.
The regime in Khartoum is, as you say, an Islamist government. It has tried to impose Sharia on Christians and animists in the south. It has been responsible for horrific acts of genocide against the people of Darfur, now engaging terrible predations against the people of the Nuba Mountains. Faith McDonald is our guest. She is the author of Girl Soldier, A Story of Hope for Northern Uganda's Children. And she directs the Religious Liberty Programs at the marvelous organization, the Institute on Religion and Democracy in Washington, D.C. Faith McDonald, one of the things that is so striking about all this is that the Obama administration seems reflexively to support the Islamists rather than the people that you've described who are seeking freedom and an authentic democracy, whether it's in South Sudan or whether it's elsewhere in Sudan. Put this into context for us as you look at the larger region, what the administration is doing and what it's doing will mean to us, I guess is the question, more than just to the people most immediately involved.
Yes, Frank. It's a strange situation. The government, the U.S. government seems to be siding with Khartoum, or at least portraying them as morally equivalent to the people who they're persecuting and attacking. If you compare it to what we did with Libya and the U.S. and the U.N., NATO, the real push to get Gaddafi out and to support the so-called freedom fighters in Libya, who, by the way, the leader of which was trained in Khartoum. It's just unbelievable. We've got real freedom fighters among the marginalized people groups of Sudan, and particularly this group of military, the Sudan People's Liberation Army North. These are soldiers who had originally fought with the South against the North, but when the South received the ability to form a new country because of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, the Nuba Mountain people did not receive that. They were stuck in the north. And so when Khartoum started attacking last June, the military went to work again. And this is, it's quite a military. They have won all the battles on the ground. And these are the kind of people that the U.S. should have as allies if we were really wanting democracy of the kind that didn't allow Sharia states to be formed and Muslim brotherhoods to take over. The world is turned upside down, like Melanie Phillips said.
Yes. Well, we're looking again, Faith McDonald, at a situation that, as you said, and as Congressman Frank Wolf pointed out to us last week, is made all the more bizarre since, as he put it, I think, virtually all of the bad actors that we are confronting, notably the Al Qaeda operation, as well as the others that the regime in Khartoum is supporting, emanate from this one backwards and really quite depraved part of the world. And so, your warnings to us about what's happening to the folks in South Sudan and elsewhere at their hands is a further reminder to us that we indeed have an interest here, not just a humanitarian interest, but perhaps a strategic one as well, to put this horrific regime in Khartoum out of business. Faith McDonald, thank you so much for your courage and your leadership and giving voice to these long-suffering people and for keeping it in front of the rest of us. Come back to us again very soon.
Thank you, Frank.
Next up, Gordon Chang gives us an update on the North Korean missile test and what that will mean for you. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of 3 children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a 5th grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a 5-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show. Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with, you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back as we are each week, happily, with Gordon Chang, our duty guy on Asia. He is also a contributor to Fox News for that purpose and to Forbes.com, where he writes a column, and World Affairs Journal, where he frequently publishes as well. He is the author of two important books. We've often discussed the subject involved in the first, The Coming Collapse of China. But I also wanted to visit with him today, most especially about the second, Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. And Gordon Chang, it seems as though it's deja vu all over again, I guess. We've got the North Koreans once again posturing and, in fact, doing things that are quite aggressive. And
The West seems to be, once again, uncertain as to what to do other than to reward them for it. Tell us what's happening at the moment in North Korea and what we should be doing rather than encouraging this kind of behavior.
North Korea right now has put its missile onto the gantry, all three stages. It has done some partial fueling, and at this very moment, it is digging earth out of a tunnel, which probably means that there will be a third nuclear test right after the missile launch. In 2006 and 2009, the North followed long-range missile tests with detonation of nuclear devices. So we're seeing the same pattern all over again. And people in the West said, you know, there's not much that we can do about this, but there is. We can put into place tough sanctions like the Bush administration did in 2005, and those actually crippled the North Korean economy. Now, unfortunately, the Bush administration, at the behest of Beijing, lifted those sanctions prematurely, but we could put those sanctions back in place, and we need to do so now, because this is not just a question of North Korea. Iran is watching what's going on, and they will be buying North Korea's missile if it's successful.
Now, let's talk a little bit about this missile, Gordon. I know this is not necessarily your stock in trade, but it is important to understand at least some of its characteristics and capabilities. As I understand it, this is a missile that is going to be used ostensibly to deliver a satellite into space, but in the process demonstrate some rather prodigious long-range delivery capabilities, surface to surface, as they say. How serious a threat does this missile represent, not just to our friends and allies in the region, but perhaps to us as well, this so-called Taipodong 2 missile?
In January 2011, then Defense Secretary Robert Gates said that North Korea, within 5 years, would have an intercontinental ballistic missile that would be able to reach the American homeland. We are now 1 year closer to that. And within those 4 years, I'm sure North Korea will be able to shrink its warheads, mate them to missiles, and be able to aim them with pinpoint accuracy into the United States. So that's what we're talking about.
The Japanese have indicated that if this thing flies over their islands, as a previous missile launch did out of North Korea, they are prepared and willing to shoot it down. This has prompted the North Koreans to say that they would respond, you know, very violently should anybody interfere with their missile's flight. Give us a sense of how serious you think the prospects are that this test could, well, no pun intended, rocket out of control, Gordon Chang.
Well, it's possible. In 1998, 2006, and 2009, the North Korean long-range missile tests were not completely successful. And so, you know, there's always the possibility that within 40 seconds this missile blows up. But I suspect, and this is just a gut feeling, that after those three tests that they will be successful this time. I don't think debris is going to fall on Japan or South Korea, so I don't think that Seoul or Tokyo will try to blast this thing out of the sky. But you've got to remember that whether this test is successful or not, the North Koreans are going to learn a lot because they will have the telemetry. And countries learn as much from their failures as from their successes. So we shouldn't be gloating if this thing doesn't do well. But as I said, my gut tells me this is going to be a spectacularly successful test.
Gordon Chang, one of the things that you've touched on here, of course, is the connection between Iran and North Korea. Talk to us a little bit about this possibility that there could be a third underground nuclear test as well as this missile test and what it might mean for both the collaboration with Iran and perhaps the threat of that nuclear capability that we keep worrying about, we've talked about several times in the course of the program today, emerging more rapidly in Iran as a result. Could this, in fact, be an Iranian nuclear weapon that's being tested by the North Koreans?
The North Koreans and the Iranians have had a joint missile and nuclear program for more than a decade. And for both of North Korea's known tests of nuclear weapons in 2006 and 2009, Iranian observers were in the north on site to see all of what was going on. So we can expect the Iranians to be there this time as well. And so, you know, essentially, this is not just a North Korea issue. What we have to worry about is the connections that the North has with Iran, and also that both Iran and North Korea have with China, because China has been in the background with both of these nuclear programs. And so, therefore, it's important for us to understand this triangle of evil, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, and the possibility, indeed, Gordon Chang, that this proliferation of these kinds of technologies, both missile and nuclear, could go quite far beyond Iran, as this really is, as you've pointed out to us in the past, one of North Korea's, if not its only cash crop, certainly one of very few. Gordon, you've also written, I think, a quite important piece in your essay most recently at World Affairs Journal, about why the North Korean hidden gulag matters. And I'm often reminded of the point that's been made, I think, by you, but certainly by others, that, you know, how a nation treats its own people is instructive as to how they might, if they have the chance, treat others. Tell us what's going on here. What is this gulag about? How many folks are incarcerated in it? How much worse is their life than that of the average North Koreans who's got a pretty miserable existence, too? And again, why should all this matter to us?
There's about 154,000 North Koreans in their political prisoner camps. That's according to Seoul. According to the State Department and Amnesty International, perhaps 200,000. These camps really approximate what we saw in the Third Reich in terms of what they do to their people. Basically, North Koreans are worked to death. They are executed there. They are tortured and brutalized. And it matters to us because, as you point out, Frank, how a nation treats its own people really goes to the core of the regime. And so, you know, we try to deal with the North Koreans like a normal country, but they're not, and we have to remember that. You know, the Obama administration on February 29th reached what's called the Leap Day Agreement, sort of testing the intentions of the new leader in North Korea, Kim Jong-un. But we have found since then that North Korea is not willing to deal with the international community in good faith. So we need to switch tactics. We need to be as tough as we possibly can because we cannot deal with this regime, whether it's young Kim Jong-un or his father Kim Jong-il or, you know, Kim Il-sung before that. This is a regime that we cannot deal with.
Yeah. You know, I you've written about this Shin Dong-kyuk, an escapee from one of these prisons. I heard a fascinating interview with somebody who had written about his life story, and boy, it really brings home just how barbaric and brutal and you know, torturing are these camps. And Gordon Chang, I guess to just again to reinforce this point, North Korea would, if it had its way, clearly impose this kind of hardship on an awful lot of other people beyond its own borders. What is it you would recommend we be doing specifically at this point to try to terminate this regime and end the horrific behavior that it's engaged in? And I've got to give you all of about 20 seconds to say it.
Sanction North Korea, sanction Chinese banks that finance North Korean sales of weapons technology, and, you know, do all that we can, both soft and hard tactics, to undermine the Kim family.
There you go. Gordon Chang, as much to the point as always, thank you for joining us as always, and we'll look forward to visiting with you again next week. We'll look forward to visiting with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
Leave your comments or questions for us at 1-800-332-7131.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.